I'm Amy Hall. I'm here with Greg Kokel, and you're listening to Stand to Reason's hashtag STRask podcast. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Hi, Amy.
All right. This is the podcast where we depend on your questions. So if you have a question, go to Twitter, use the hashtag STRask, or you can go to our website, go to our contact page, choose I have another question, put somewhere in your question hashtag STRask. But it has to be short. If you send me a long question, I will send you back a short little paragraph that shows how short it is. And you will be surprised.
Yeah, Amy is good at that. I know from painful experience having my own writing trimmed down to fighting weight, so to speak.
So we really need your questions. We can't do the show without you. So please, if you have a question, send it on in and we will consider it.
Yeah, and if you do it shorter, like Amy's asking, she doesn't have to shorten it for you, so she can spend more time shortening my stuff down.
That's right.
Division of labor here.
All right, Greg, we have a collection of somewhat unusual questions for this episode. Mm-hmm. So I hope you're ready for this. This first one comes from Giselle Aguiar. What's your opinion on extraterrestrials? Would God have created them?
Well, my opinion, I have two opinions. I mean, I have an opinion coming from two different directions, all right? Let's go theological. We have no reason theologically to think that God would have created any extraterrestrials, all right? Any rational personal beings in other parts of the universe. Now, is it possible? Certainly it's possible. Is it plausible? Sure. I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be the case. But we have no reason to believe it is the case. And when we read the biblical account, it does seem like the entire focus of the created realm, even the spiritual realm, angelic realm, is on this planet. What is happening here? And you know, the angels long to see, you know, kind of thing. And so I do not speculate then on the basis of that. Given the fact, by the way, that redemption is accomplished through a kinship redeemer, and that kinship redeemer is the human being that God became, all right, then if this is something that seems to be a necessary part, that is a substitutionary atonement of the whole process, and we would argue that, then what is left for the salvation of other creatures in other parts of the universe if they are equally fallen? Nothing. I mean, I guess you could imagine, well, the second person can become, the third person could become, Yoda
or something.
Two
more persons.
Huh? Yeah, you can do it two more times. Maybe, I don't know. That's just kind of wild speculation, theoretically. But Hugh Ross says that, who does a lot of thinking about these kinds of things since he's an astrophysicist, says that he thinks if there are extraterrestrials, then they're not fallen because he doesn't see. I guess you'd have to add, if they are fallen, there's no hope for redemption for them, like the angels. But those are seem to be the theological realities. Now, when it comes to the other half of my response has to do with just science, and that is we have no reason to believe that there's other things living. We do know that the idea that there is a planet in the entire universe as unbelievably massive as it is that can sustain complex life is nil. I mean, the chances of that are nil, all right? And the reason people say, well, just do the math, man. Look at how many stars and planets and galaxies. No, so we have done the math. And you can read about it in a book called Rare Earth. And this is not written by Christians. And a lot of people have done the math on this that have no theological axe to grind. And what they've learned about Earth is it's rare. The kind of parameters that are in place for this planet in our galaxy, in this solar system, I mean, this goes to the location of the planet of the solar system in the galaxy. It's the planet itself and the planet in its position in the solar system. You're not going to get life on Venus. You're not going to get life, certainly not complex, on Venus or Mars. And those are the only other candidates, all right? Venus is too close. Mars is too far away. And they're also, is there water on Mars? Even if you find a bunch of water, all water is a necessity for life. It doesn't mean you're going to get life. Life is a whole lot more than water. Please. You know, and then you look at the solar system in its position in the galaxy. It's very, very precise. Okay. And there's all these things in regarding our planet, and the scientists call this the Goldilocks effect. I watched a documentary called The Goldilocks Effect, made by materialistic scientists, had no interest in God at all. They didn't believe in God, as far as we could tell. It was all evolution stuff. But it was called the Goldilocks factor or something to that effect, you know. And that is just the right place, very finely tuned. Long and short of it is, it is a miracle there is even one planet that is capable of sustaining complex life. And if you want the Christian source in this, the classic is The Privileged Planet by J. Richards and Guillermo Gonzalez, which was done many years ago. It's only out of date in the sense that so many more details have been discovered that will make their point more aggressively than they did. And if you don't read the whole book, just get the DVD. We sell it as a package. It's magnificent. It's just magnificent. And you'll never, the whole package, you won't be ashamed to show that to any non-Christian. Okay. So on the scientific side, there's no reason to believe that there's other places. But certainly nothing that we have seen that people attribute to extraterrestrials can be extraterrestrials. And that's based simply on the laws of physics. We're just too far away from any place. The nearest star, for goodness sake, is, you know, massive amounts of light years away. When I say massive, it's not massive compared to the rest of the universe. But even if it's like 3 light years away, I don't know where Alpha Centauri is. And I don't think there's any planets there anyway. But just that there's no physically possible way for any physical thing to travel in any meaningful period of time from there to here to communicate. And people say, well, maybe they don't have the same physics. Well, then you're talking science fiction now. You're not talking science. So there's no, based on everything we know, there's no good reason that anything that we see is actually extraterrestrials visiting. There's something happening. There's no question about that. The question is, what is it? And it doesn't, based on science, there's no reason to believe that it is extraterrestrials.
All right. Thanks, Greg. I don't really have anything to add because it's so speculative. And it's an interesting question. I think if they ever did show up, we would have, there would have to be a lot of thinking about how we would, their relationship to God and whether or not they're fallen. And mm-hmm. I assume Jesus could not represent them if they're not human. So I don't know. It would be very interesting if that were to ever happen. But I agree. I don't think there's any indication. But I also don't think if they did show up that it would contradict Christianity in any way.
Well, you know what? People have asked, well, what if an alien showed up and said there was no God? So there. You know, as if the aliens in a privileged position of understanding to see what we don't see. They're so smart because the technological expertise has nothing to do with the question of whether there is a God. Okay, there's lots and lots of really, really smart scientists or smart people in other fields that are atheists for dumb reasons. Okay, the existence of God is always determined by the reasons. So if somebody showed up and said, who is an alien, let's just stipulate and said, well, there is no God, you're all wrong about all your religion. I'd say, well, why would you say that? How did the universe start? How did the universe come from nothing? Where did the moral standard come from? From you, you know? I mean, so all of the arguments still apply. Even there is no difference this may be surprising to some people and hopefully a relief. There is absolutely no difference from an alien declaring there is no God than your local village skeptic declaring there is no God. It has no more weight. The weight is all in the reasons and the responses to the evidence that we have that God does exist, regardless of – that's genetic fallacy. It doesn't matter whose mouth it comes out of, whether it's a human being or an atheist, whether it's an idiot or a brilliant person. Same thing with Christianity. An idiot can believe Christianity. It doesn't mean that Christianity is idiotic. You have to weigh the belief system on its merits, apart from who it is that's speaking, making the claim. Amy.
Greg, you're right that people have this weird idea that if an alien were to come and say that, that would make it true. There's some weird thing that we think they would have more of authority about all sorts of things. In fact, it reminds me of that movie Contact. That's, it's been decades now since that movie happened. But
it's a great movie, by the way. I absolutely love that movie. And I love Jodie Foster, and she does a great job in it. It's really dumb, though, as it touches on theological issues, just saying.
Well, I thought it was so funny at the time that when she realizes that all these aliens exist, she's fulfilled. And she's, this idea that, oh, we're not alone. This is what I've been searching for. And my thought was, there's billions of people on this planet. What does the existence of aliens do to make you less alone? It was such a bizarre thing. And I haven't really figured out what it is, but I think people attach some sort of spiritual thing to the idea of aliens and aliens being greater than us, because I think we all desire to have something that's greater than us. That's the God-shaped hole that we have in us that we try to fill in different ways. But I always thought that was so funny. But this idea that the aliens are somehow going to fulfill us in some way. Anyway, now we've gotten way off track.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. That's good stuff.
All right, let me go on to the next
question.
Maybe
for some people, they say, I've been listening to STR Ask and then all this time, and then they talked about this idea, what happens when an alien says there is no God? And it was just a little throwaway. They have spent 4 minutes to talk about it, and that was the part I'll never forget, just like your Gary Habermas comment from last show.
Yes. All right, here's a question from Dandy Prime. What kind of humor does God have? And is the way people make jokes or try to be funny contingent on subjective culture and context, or is there a more concise and objective rule or rules at play here?
That's a very interesting question. And the best person to ask about these questions are comics. And I'll just recommend something to read in this regard. And it's a book called Born Standing Up. And it's by Steve Martin. And it's a magnificent autobiography. I have so much respect for him as an individual. He used to date a Christian performer. What was her name? Because they worked together.
Oh, I know you're thinking of, but I can't think of her name either.
Yeah, they worked together at Knott's Berry Farm when he was young. He grew up right very near Disneyland. And one of his first jobs was in the Magic Club at Disneyland, like the magic shop, where that's how he got the arrow through the head stuff, And so he talks about all that, but he never Omardian, Stormy Omardian, and that's the girl and gal. He never takes a single cheap shot, not only at her, but at anybody at all. In the entire book, he's a very generous individual, but it's fascinating to look at how he is assessing the whole comic enterprise and what makes people laugh. And there's a lot of factors that are involved. It's not just one, and many of them are cultural. I know this because I'll tell you this anecdote in a moment. But he noticed that he went to the top of his career, and then he quit right at the top. Unusual. And then he got into movies and he went in the bottom. He didn't do well at the beginning. Okay. But he was done. He accomplished his goal. And that is just showing up on the stage and just saying like one word, like, excuse me. And everybody starts exploding in laughter because there's a dynamic that was there that he built into. But when I sometimes joke when I talk to Chinese audiences, I say, you guys got a great sense of humor. And then they all start chuckling. And I said, because you laugh at my jokes. And then they laugh. And I said, and even if they're not funny. And then they laugh. And then I said, look, you even laughed at Craig Hazin here. And then they laugh. And I said, he's not even funny. And then they laugh again. Okay. And one thing I learned is I tell them, you know, I'm listening to the Chinese, the guy who comes before me, and they had the Chinese speaker, and then there's English translation, and I'm waiting because the Chinese speaker speaks and everybody's laughing. And then I'm waiting. I can't wait for the translation. And then they give the translation. And I think, that's not funny. And I tell them that. And then, of course, they laugh at that too. So there are, I think, the humor is really a is very culturally determined, but it has to do with juxtaposition of ideas. It has to do with surprise, certain surprise things. You know, I often will say when I start a talk early in the morning, you know, before my first cup of coffee, I'm an atheist, you know. Well, nobody expects me to say that. I'm a Christian guy, so I'm an apologist. And I say that, and then that's really funny because a big part of it is surprise. So that's a huge part of it. So I guess the long and short of it is these things are very culturally determined. Now, whether I think this is unique to human beings. I mean, human beings are the only ones who laugh, because what you have to do is you have to be able to humor is something that is a rational enterprise. It relates to a particular and a peculiar kind of connection between two things. Okay, and those are varied. You know, you could have a person who always puts himself down. You know, Henny Youngman, or I don't get no respect. Who's that guy? You know, that guy. And you could have other people who are always kind of in a jocular fashion bragging, I never said that before. That's a brilliant statement. I better write it down because, you know, I may not be able to think of this again. And people chuckle at that. So that's just different ways of playing up. But that's a rational process. That's a very peculiar capability. And when you say, you know, the question is about God's sense of humor, I don't know quite how to answer that. God has equipped us to be able to have interplay with language. Every once in a while, you're going to see an interplay like that in Scripture, you know, where there's a kind of a bit of sarcasm. You see that in Paul. I'm just wondering if Jesus does it, you know. I can't think of anything right now, but... So what I guess I'm not sure if God has a sense of humor, except for only in the ironic sense. Yeah, look who he chose for disciples, right? Okay, there's irony in some of that. And irony is a type of humor, but he's not always making jokes. But he has given us the capability to see relationships between things that we can draw for the sake of humor, okay? And I love listening to... Well, Stephen Wright, okay. Sometimes if I'm just bored, I'll go and listen to Stephen Wright on YouTube for 5 minutes because he's all one-liners and he's like the far side of stand-up comic. You know, he never cracks a smile, hardly ever. But every joke is funny and they're only about 10 seconds long, you know. So anyway, thank God for the sense of humor. I don't know if God, strictly speaking, has a sense of humor in the way that we use it, but he certainly has given us the capacity to see relationships that strike us as funny, and it lifts our spirits. And I think this is part of the common grace of God.
It sounds to me, Greg, like you were saying that possibly there are maybe some bigger categories in humor that... Within those categories, the culture will play some sort of role. Like, for example, human beings wear clothes, but then the type of clothes that they wear would be dependent on the culture. So the mm-hmm. idea of surprise or the idea of wordplay or things like that would mm-hmm. be something that would be everywhere, but how that would play out would be different in each culture.
Yeah, like the emperor's new clothes, that wouldn't work much in a nudist colony, I guess. It just occurred to me. Okay, so, you know, there's some humor, right? Right? Just because there's an absurdity mm-hmm. right there and a kind of an ironic contrast there.
And something you said, Greg, any humor that's not – it made me think of this. Any humor that's not mean, which I don't think God would ever engage in, say, for example, just making fun of somebody straight out.
Yeah.
That obviously would not be anything biblical. But something you said made me think this, Greg, that humor is an enjoyment of creation. It's a way of enjoying creation. It's a way of lightening our hearts. It's a way of it's almost a way of beauty, because it's a way to enjoy and get enjoyment out of creation. And that's obviously something that God intends for us. God intends us to enjoy his creation. So as long as the humor is not mean and is not somehow against some the dignity of human beings, I think it is something God wants for us. All right, Greg, we're out of time. We only got through two of these unusual questions, but we'll mm-hmm. save the rest for another time.
Let's do more weird stuff next time around. This is fun.
Well, thank you, everyone. We always appreciate hearing from you. We can't do this show without you. So send those questions on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.